Hello. My fellow Americans and the people who brought me the dance, Delawareans. I see my buddy, Senator Tom Carper down there, and I think Senator Coons is there, and I think the governor's around. Is that Ruth Ann? And that former Governor Ruth Ann Minner. Most importantly, my sisters-in-law, my sister Valerie. Anyway. Folks, the people of this nation have spoken. They've delivered us a clear victory, a convincing victory, a victory for we the people. We've won with the most votes ever cast on a presidential ticket in the history of the nation. 74 million.
David, first things for a Sunday morning, November 15th.
Good morning, Steve. It's a cloudy but clear morning here on the sidewalk that I trod this morning, taking the road less traveled. Traveled by me every morning, but not by everybody else via walk. And I want to take up this point that Biden started his speech with when he delivered it on Saturday, 8 days ago. So that would have been the 7th, November 7th. And he says, we got more votes than anybody ever received. 74 million, he said at that time. It'll be higher than that by the time we're done. It'll be more like 77 million by the time we're done counting. Because it takes a while to count in New York and California, two very blue states. So the votes are still coming in, lots of them. So here's what I want to talk about, Steve, today, November 15th. First things, there's a famous book by Richard Ben Cramer called What It Takes. And it was published in 1989, and it's about the 1988 presidential campaign. And it's really a fascinating, examination of the psychology and the strategies and the serendipity of presidential campaigns. Everything, things that go into it and how hard it is to win, and also what the toll is on the people that campaign. But it's also in the title, What It Takes, an assessment of what it takes from our democracy for a presidential campaign to occur in the American context. We're a unique Western nation in that we run presidential campaigns for unlimited amounts of time. And usually that means not a month or 2 months, it means more. Very different than Germany, who run or Israel, they run these campaigns usually for a month, month and a half, 2 months. And there's an official kind of start, and then it runs, there's certain boundaries around it, and then it's over. We don't have any of that in this free speech, libertarian United States. Things just go for as long as it takes, as long as people want to invest in it. So What It Takes is about what it takes to win the campaign and also what it takes to survive it and to build a democracy. In this particular, so I encourage you to read that book. It's a fascinating book, and I read these kinds of things for fun. Nothing better than a psychological examination of a campaign for me. Okay.
You got to be a lot of fun on a vacation.
I am getting less fun by the day. Okay. I just want you to know that there's a running joke in our family that if I'm reading something, it's one of two things. It's some kind of historical analysis of our democracy, or it's disaster literature. Okay, it's about like a tsunami that wiped out an island, or an earthquake, or a hurricane, something like that. I'm fascinated by the ways in which humans have to respond and make decisions in the midst of challenges and what goes into that. So the answer to your question is, I don't take a lot of vacations. Okay. So that's true. Now, what it took in this campaign to win this election for the Democrats was the highest turnout and vote total for their presidential candidate in the history of this country. That is partly because population continues to increase in our society, and so more people get to vote. But it's more because of this massive turnout. So let's compare 2016 to 2020. 2016, Hillary Clinton gets 65 million votes, and Donald Trump gets 62.5 million votes. And those vote totals are slightly smaller than the Obama vote totals in 2008, but they're right around where Obama and Romney were in 2012. So 65 mil, 62.5 million. This election is going to be 77 million for Biden, and it's going to be 74 million for Trump. A massive increase. So this is instead of going on vacation, this is what I did. I went back and I looked at all of the presidents who since 1900 have run for re-election but were not re-elected. So what folks lost their re-election? And quick quiz for you, who are they, Steve?
George Bush. By the way, I just want to say, George H.W. Bush. I just want to say Biden, as of now, has 78 million. Let's not cut it short. 78.6.
Okay.
Let's see. Ran for re-election, didn't win. George Bush, Herbert Hoover.
Yeah, you're halfway there.
Oh, you want me to go beyond? You want me to go further back?
No, you're halfway of the number who haven't won since 1900.
What'd I say? Herbert Hoover. I'm not missing anybody in the present time. So then we got to go back to who ran against Teddy the first time Teddy ran. Who was the president when Teddy?
Warmer. We're getting warmer.
I used to know all this, you know. I could even name Grover Cleveland's two terms. I don't remember because I only have had half a cup of coffee.
Okay, so working backwards in time from today, George H.W. Bush loses re-election in 1992. You know, you got that. This is an embarrassing moment for you right here. In 1980, Jimmy Carter loses re-election.
Oh, geez, that is. See, I was asleep. There you go.
Herbert, you got Hoover. Herbert Hoover. That's a standard one because what a landslide that was in 1932. And then you were right there with the guy who ran against Roosevelt. It was Taft.
Taft
won in 1908, lost in 1912.
And then got to be on the Supreme Court.
Exactly. That's the way it worked back in those days, okay? Although Trump could be a Supreme Court. I'm just joking. Okay, so four folks who, since 1900, lost re-election. And the reason I went to 1900, I actually went all the way back to the beginning of the American presidency. But there's so many shifts over time in who gains the right to vote, which is great, that you can't really compare apples to apples because you're introducing people across elections when there's a dramatically different segment of the population that can vote from one election to the next. So the four that I'm able to talk about here all had basically the same body of folks voting for their first election and for their second election. Okay, so I went back and looked at these folks, and Taft loses in 1912. When Taft loses in 1912, he gets 55% fewer votes. 55% fewer votes, just raw number of votes, than he got in 1908. It's less than half of what he got in 1908.
Wow.
When Hoover runs for re-election, he gets 27% less. So a fourth less than he got in 1928. Jimmy Carter in 1980 gets 13% less votes than he got in 1976. And George H.W. Bush in 1992 gets 20% fewer votes than he got in 1976. Donald Trump in 2020 has so far received 16% more votes than he got in 2016. 16% more than he got in 2016. And way beyond what Hillary Clinton got in 2016. Trump's at, as I said, 73, 74 million right now. You can probably tell me exactly. What's he at?
Oh, I went away from it, but it was 73.
Okay. So he went from, from 62 and a half to 73. And he'd probably get to 74 million by the time he's done. He did not, this is not an election where the Trump vote did not come out. The Trump vote was out in massive numbers in this election. They came out and they voted for Republicans up and down the ticket. That's why Republicans have done very well in the House of Representatives and are in position to hold the U.S. Senate. This election took a massive turnout on the part of Democrats in order to defeat Donald Trump. Had there been anything less than a historic turnout for Joe Biden, then the Democrats are sitting on the sidelines again for this presidency, having also lost seats in the House and not in control of the Senate at this time. Consider that Joe Biden will win Wisconsin, has won Wisconsin by 20,000 votes, has won Arizona by 10,500 votes, will win Pennsylvania by about 60 to 75,000 votes, and has won Georgia so far by 14,000 votes. You move three of those. You move 10,000 out of Arizona, you take 20,000 out of Wisconsin, or you take 14,000 out of Georgia. And the reality is that Donald Trump is president again. In 2016, those numbers, essentially were reversed in a Wisconsin, a Michigan, and a Pennsylvania, and Trump became president. So what it takes for us to gain the majority in this democracy at the presidential level is this kind of engagement. This is what it takes. That's the truth. That's the truth that we have going forward. And anything less than a full-on sustained effort by us at Common Power, by partner organizations, by people who are fighting for just and inclusive democracy is going to lead to disappointment. That's the message this morning. And that's why I'm so thrilled to see our engagement in Georgia, where we have hundreds of volunteers that are pushing. We don't know if we'll win there, but this is what it takes. This is the necessary condition to have a chance to win.
Yeah, that's all you need to say. I completely understand what you're saying. We are in pitched battles around the country right now because people, we talk about people being divided, and sure, they're divided. They're emotionally ramped up to the point where they can't really hear the positions, the values that people are expressing. And, I'm the same. I don't hear the values in the folks who voted for Trump. I don't hear it. I hear other things, but I sure don't hear sort of like the human values that are supposed to sustain us through those times that you were talking about of disaster. But progressives have to be able to articulate. I don't, we used to talk about how we needed to reach out. We had to reach out to the white male voter and all that. That's what followed the Hillary recriminations. But I don't think it's about reaching out. It's about being able to articulate and continuing to articulate what policies we want to put into place for who. I mean, good policies should be good policies for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's both and. It's that we need to mobilize folks who agree with the Democrats, and particularly communities that have been largely not invested in, people of color, younger voters, lower income voters, or have been marginalized through voter suppression.
Yeah.
And we also need to develop a message that works for all. That's the case. But here's what I would say is that no single message is the driver of this at all. It's about action. It's about the ability to put our time and our treasure where our values are. You know, I would often, one of the things that over the years of being a professor at UW, conversations that I would have with really, really talented young people. I mean, what incredible students I would get the chance to work with. And I would talk many, many hours. I see it now with my own son, who's a freshman in college. I would talk many, many hours with them about what they hope to do professionally or personally, like move across the country or become this kind of a professional leader or achieve this benchmark. And I would say to them, what are you willing to do to make that happen? What are you willing to do? Are you willing to change how you spend money? Are you willing to take certain kinds of jobs? Are you willing to devote years of study for a medical school or a law school degree? What are you willing to do? How are you willing to orient your life to make it happen? Because everybody I've seen who achieves great things in our society through their community support, through their own personal work, most who I don't know, but I've just have seen publicly and read about and watched, have oriented their lives in dramatic ways to achieve their goal. They train, they study, they work, they eat certain ways. They do all of these things. So for democracy, what are we willing to do? Well, we now know what it takes. It takes time and it takes treasure. It takes a determination that this is important enough to orient our lives to make it happen. So I say to everybody who's listening to this, that question is there for us every day going forward. Are we willing to orient our lives to achieve the outcomes of a just and inclusive democracy? Are we willing to change jobs, to give money, to give time, to push through comfort zones, to do everything that it's gonna take? So what it takes in this democracy is a turnout of historic proportions, particularly mobilized by really smart organizations that we work with. That's what it takes. And I wish it were easier. Wish it were like Uber Eats, okay? Like you just pull up the app and you dial up what you want and then it arrives within an hour. But damn it, it doesn't work that way. It takes podcasts at 6 a.m. It takes constant phone calling. It takes devotion of money. It takes pain. It takes growth. It takes determination. This is what it takes, folks. The biggest turnout in the history of American presidential politics. And that's how we won. Anything less. And Donald Trump has a second term presidency. That's where we are. That's the lesson of this presidential election. Is what it takes is it takes it all. How we do that? The only way I know how is in community. So that's how we do it in Common Power. But that's what it takes.